by nature, I freely admit, and I spend all my days in the fields at a tiring old trade, which may well be unpaid, which brings all the farmers their yields.
Hello, and welcome to your talking newspaper for St Albans, Harpenden, and the surrounding area. I'm Bill. This is the Red Saturn programme for Saturday, 29th of May, 2021. I do hope you're all well and staying safe.
Over queen and country, though the latter is no fault of mine, I work for all and sundry, I'm a labourer come rain or shine.
The music this week is a lively contemporary folk song called For Queen and For Country, played by Rowan Piggott, who also wrote it. He's a young folk musician from Hampshire, and he's kindly allowed us to hear this track, and I will, of course, play it in full at the end of the programme. This week, as usual, we have the news stories and radio listings, and then Rupert Evershed's Nature Notes. Following this, we have a couple of articles from the current edition of Hearts Life magazine. The first is about the remarkable Richard Webb Stevens, a motorcycle and helicopter paramedic from Chipperfield. Why is he remarkable? Well, because he's deaf. The second story, read by Sue, is about 80-year-old Isabel Barnes, whose project, run from her Codicut garden, teaches that growing plants offers therapeutic qualities. We start with the news, and our readers this week are Elaine, Anna, Andrew, and Fiona.
Hello, my name's Fiona, and my first story is entitled, Should City Centre Road Closures Be Permanent? A campaign has been launched to prevent road closures in St Albans City Centre from becoming a permanent fixture. Marketplace, High Street, George Street and part of Verulam Road were closed to traffic when the first lockdown restrictions were eased in May 2020. This was implemented by Herts County Council to prevent crowded pavements in the vicinity. Herts County Council is now looking at extending the closures while sourcing feedback from the public about it becoming permanent, as well as mooting the removal of parking and loading space in Waddington Road as well. But many businesses have expressed their concerns about these closures with an online petition launched to oppose the scheme. Thomas James of L.A. James Family Antiques Dealership in George Street said, Is it not time to finally reopen our roads to normal life? Monday to Friday, the road is empty. Saturday is a minor increase and then back to empty Sunday. I understand that this was all meant to be done based upon government social distancing guidelines, but George Street and the High Street are hardly the central business areas of the town. Instead, we now see the pedestrianised sections abused by constant food markets who don't allow for social distancing and often block the gates, preventing emergency access. Derianne Tad of the Dressing Room said, The road closures on High Street and George Street are incredibly damaging to business. We pay our rates based on being situated in a prime high street location, yet closing the roads diverts traffic and passing trade. It's ridiculous and damaging for retailers at a time we need our local councils to be supporting us. A move to extend these restrictions beyond the 21st of June is simply not right. The restrictions were put in place purely due to COVID and for social distancing. To use this pandemic as a way to push through this is unfair for retailers that have built their business in a busy, thriving high street. Catherine Morris, manager of the Christopher Place Shopping Centre, said, From Verulam Road through to the Peahen Pub, we have many businesses who take great care to showcase their windows aimed at drivers sitting in traffic or passing by, and this no longer happens. I'm in full support of the smaller roads, such as George Street closing. It creates a fun hub. It allows businesses to spill onto the street, but not the main roads. It's stopping the flow of traffic. District Councillor Annie Brewster said, This is the cart before the horse. Whilst I am the greatest advocate for reducing car use, safe and efficient alternatives need to be in place first, be they segregated cycle lanes, public transport that goes to where we need it to go, getting there in reasonable time or similar. We are not Milton Keynes with a multiple grid system road layout. Effectively, we only have two roads that traverse the city centre, east-west, so to permanently close the old A5 will displace traffic to multiple other routes, creating chaos and increased idling resultant pollution, causing even greater environmental harm. Residents have suffered the impacts of these temporary closures for many months now, and alarmingly for our visitor economy, feedback already indicates many would rather travel to alternative towns or shopping centres to avoid sitting in traffic that will only increase post 21st of June. St Albans District Council leader, Councillor Chris White, portfolio holder for Climate, Environment and Transport, said, "My concern with this consultation is that it is not sufficiently embracing or detailed enough to properly gauge the views of those who could be affected. For example, there could be major traffic implications for people living across a wide area should the High Street and George Street continue to be pedestrianised as life returns to normal. This consultation exercise does not, however, attempt to engage these residents directly. Unfortunately, its terms were not discussed with us at the District Council, nor was St Albans bid, the voice of the city centre business, approached. Much more collaborative and consultative work needs to be done before any proposals can be brought forward."
Hello, my name is Elaine, and the first article I'm going to read you this week is "Homeless Provision Desperately in Need of Volunteers." A homeless charity in St Albans is making an urgent appeal for volunteers. Centre 33 was forced to close its building in Spicer Street as a converted one-bedroom flat was too small to allow adequate social distancing during the pandemic. It looks as though a vital service would be lost until the Salvation Army came to rescue by offering the use of its own facilities in Victoria Street. For 5 nights a week, dozens of homeless people, including rough sleepers and those socially or materially disadvantaged, are queuing at the front door to be given a nutritious home-cooked meal and a hot drink. They can also access friendly advice and information about where to get further help and move on positively into the future. Worryingly, the necessary service is at risk if more volunteers don't come forward. Centre 33 trustee Melanie O'Neill said, "It doesn't matter how much or how little time you are able to offer. It might be twice a week or just once a month. Every little helps. It can be a very satisfying and fulfilling experience, an opportunity to meet other like-minded people, willing to roll up their sleeves to support the homeless in the city in such challenging times." Salvation Army pastor Lieutenant Won G. Lee is also in the front line, providing essential support. They are also running a food bank and also providing many of those who turn up each evening with sleeping bags and warm clothes. He said, "This is a critical mission. Some of those who call have been on the sharp edge of the coronavirus pandemic. They've lost everything, jobs, home and income. COVID has also greatly affected family relationships. We've met husbands who've been turned out of the family home, deeply worried and depressed about what the future may hold. Helping the Centre 33 Emergency Food Project is a very positive way of offering care and compassion, while hopefully, even in a small way, improving the life chances of homeless people in our city."
Hello, my name's Andy, and my first item has the headline, "Sustfest Market is a Phenomenal Success." Thousands of people flocked to the city centre for the COVID-safe launch of this year's St Albans Sustainability Festival. Sunday's Sustainable Market kicked off 2 weeks of events with more than 70 local businesses, community groups and charities lining St Peter Street and Marketplace. Sustainable St Albans volunteer Craig Studder, who organised the market, said he was delighted with its success. The atmosphere at the market has been fantastic, with a huge buzz of optimism about easy changes we can all make to combat climate change. People clearly enjoyed being out again, doing something positive, exploring electric bikes, buying plastic-free and sustainable fashion, chatting to local groups like Greenpeace and Wilder St Albans, and eating vegan street food. Additional events on the day included tours of the incredible Edibles Community Food Garden, Bethany Church's Sustainable Living Forum, and plastic-free Harpenden's Litter Picks. Residents are invited to register for festival events taking place over the next fortnight, with a mixture of in-person and online talks, films, walks, crafts, and nature activities for all ages. Events on Thursday include the Woodcraft Folks Meet the Engineer for children, local residents Nigel and Claire Harvey on their experience of replacing their gas boiler with an air source heat pump, and an online talk on sustainable investment. Friday has Make Your Business More Sustainable, run by AECOM, a SustFest 21 gold sponsor. Yoga enthusiasts can take part in outdoor sessions in Verulamium Park. In the coming week, Highfield Park will be holding their 25th anniversary litter pick. Hearts Waste Aware are running online sessions exploring recycling and one on plastic-free periods. And there are online cooking events and videos, the Cathedral Tree Trail, bike maintenance, and group cycle rides. South St Albans churches are holding Adopt a Plant events, and Park Street Residents Association and Wheatamstead Parish Council will be running campaigns engaging local residents with sustainability. St Albans Girls' School is hosting a Biodiversity Week. Sir John Laws has Sustainable Awareness, and there are meat-free meals at Verulam School. The 19th Harpenden Rainbows and Brownies will be enjoying nature, and over 20 local schools plan to use the downloadable eco-assemblies created for all ages.
Hello, I'm Anna. My first piece is entitled Sainsbury's, and it's a warning to anyone trying to go to the Sainsbury's car park. A supermarket chain has made a U-turn over parking fines for customers visiting early on a Sunday morning. Shoppers at Sainsbury's in Coney Fields have been hit with £70 parking fines for using the Euro car park on Sunday mornings when the supermarket is open for browsing. New rules restricted the amount of time you could park on Sundays before 11 a.m. to just 10 minutes, even though the store was open from 10:30. One customer said, "The problem is that the new 10-minute rule has not been openly displayed. There are small stickers covering up the old rules, and the shop is open for browsing, therefore inviting people to park over the 10 minutes. After being contacted by the Hearts advertiser, Sainsbury's agreed to reverse the changes. A spokesperson said, "We've listened to our customer feedback and updated parking restrictions at our Coney Fields store, so that customers can use the car park from half an hour before the store opens and half an hour after it closes. Euro Car Parks operates the car park on our behalf and is working to waive and refund any fines people received as a result of this restriction, and we're apologising for the inconvenience this may have caused."
Christian Aid. A sponsored walk for Christian Aid has been a big success, raising more than double its original target. Last Saturday's walk involved 25 of the churches in St Albans and replaced an annual street collection. Fundraisers travelled the length of the district from Sandridge to Chiswell Green, spanning a distance of just under 20 miles. Organiser Anne Wall of Hatfield Road Methodist Church enthused, "The walk went very well despite the weather. Our original target was £2,500, but we have managed to raise £5,309. The second week of May is traditionally when church members visit door to door to collect money for Christian aid. But for the second year in a row, this had to be cancelled due to the pandemic. Anne added, "Christian Aid does wonderful work in the developing world, using its money to fund projects such as providing clean water, building schools, and equipping hospitals."
MP tables motion calling for new acute hospital to be built in region. The fight for a new hospital in West Harts is heading to Parliament. Hemel MP Sir Mike Penning has tabled an early day motion calling for a new acute hospital to be built on a greenfield site in the area. His motion reads, "That this House notes that the acute hospital in Watford was the first hospital to be built under the reign of Queen Victoria, further notes that the hospital has since been developed in an ad hoc manner and that the deterioration of its facilities has made it harder for the excellent doctors, nurses and auxiliary staff to carry out their work. Notes that there is a lack of affordable parking facilities for staff, patients and visitors as a result of its location next to a Premier League football club. Recognises the further pressure put on the hospital's facilities following the closure of acute services at St Albans and Hemel Hospital, which were opposed by the majority of local residents, and calls on the government to halt the taxpayer-funded redevelopment of the Watford site and welcome the news that £590 million is available for a new acute hospital on a greenfield site that can serve all of the growing population of West Hertfordshire." Early day motions are used by MPs to raise awareness of issues they are concerned about and to highlight the issue with government ministers. Sir Mike said, "It is obvious that trying to upgrade or even rebuild the hospital on the existing site will be nigh on impossible whilst keeping it fully operational. It's almost a completely unsuitable location to fairly serve the people of Hemel Hempstead and St Albans. So I will continue to use every opportunity to put pressure on the West Harts Hospitals NHS Trust to see common sense. By building on a new site, the Trust could equally serve the people of Hemel Hempstead, Watford and St Albans with easy access, plenty of space for expansion and offer free and level car parking for staff, patients and visitors alike. I understand Watford residents may be worried they will lose their hospital, but there's no reason why they cannot keep some acute services on the Vicarage Road site. I call it on West Hertfordshire MPs to back my early day motion." But St Albans MP Daisy Cooper does not believe time should be wasted looking at other sites for a new hospital. She says, "I continue to support the decision of the Hospital Trust to deliver significantly improved facilities as soon as possible. As I've said all along, there is a real risk that by spending more time looking at other options and sites, our local trust could lose access to the funding completely, and that would be a disaster for all of us in West Harts. I've also been reassured that the existing buildings at Watford General, which are in a poor state of repair, will not be retained for clinical use. St Albans City Hospital already has a new cutting-edge orthopaedic centre, and in time it will also be home to a new rapid cancer diagnostic centre and improved operating theatre capacity too. It is fantastic news that St Albans residents will finally have these state-of-the-art services on their doorstep."
My second item is an obituary of a man who led a very interesting life. The title is "Celebrating the Life of Last Action Hero Roy Scammell." An iconic stuntman who appeared in the likes of Alien, Flash Gordon, Doctor Who and A Clockwork Orange has died at the age of 88. Bricketwood resident Roy Scammell, who also enjoyed a career as a dancer, ice skater and actor, was born in Kingsbury on July 28, 1932 and died on May 15, 2021 at Luton and Dunstable Hospital following a short illness. He left school at the age of 13 and pursued a passion for skating, landing a semi-pro title for the Wembley Lions. In between games, he worked on an act jumping over 16 barrels on the ice, landing an audition on the Tom Arnold Ice Show. Roy broke into acting thanks to his friendship with Tony Newley, Dodger in the original Oliver, after his agent saw him performing somersaults at Pygate Diving Club, making his debut in Vice Versa in 1948, before working at the notorious Windmill Theatre. His first high fall was in Israel on the 1966 film Cast a Giant Shadow, when he doubled for the legendary Kirk Douglas and ended up singing Strangers in the Night with Frank Sinatra at a local nightclub. He went on to double for Peter Sellers in the original Casino Royale in 1967, and in musical The Four Musketeers on Drury Lane with Harry Secombe, before joining stunt team Havoc on Doctor Who. This led him to feature in a spectacular set-piece plunge from a 50-foot-high gasometer, at the time the highest ever fall performed by a British stuntman, and dressing up as companion Caroline John to fall into a raging weir on the River Thames. As well as Doctor Who, Roy featured in many other BBC shows of the time, including The O'Needed Line and Pebble Mill at One, before joining director Ridley Scott as stunt arranger on the original Alien in 1979, and playing the xenomorph who is ejected from the shuttle at the end. His contribution to seminal 70s movie A Clockwork Orange, including choreographing the standout house invasion scene, suggesting the use of Singing in the Rain to Stanley Kubrick, the director, with whom he also worked on Barry Lyndon in 1975. Roy also tested the flying rigs on Superman the Movie in 1978, took charge of the winged Hawkmen Warriors in Flash Gordon in 1980, and doubled for Steve McQueen in The Great Escape in 1963, as well as arranging some of the legendary motorbike chase. He was also no stranger to the West End, and Andrew Lloyd Webber commissioned him to arrange the skate racing scenes in Starlight Express. Speaking to this reporter for an interview in Doctor Who magazine 3 years ago, he said, "If you look after the body, it looks after you. I've been very lucky. I've had one or two bangs, but nothing serious. There's always a risk there. Preparation is everything. But there's always something that can go wrong. There are things where you look back and think, I'm glad I did that. But when you've done a good job, you get a sense of satisfaction. I've been very lucky. It's nothing I expected." His daughter Karen Best said, "I'm deeply saddened to announce the passing of my remarkable father. He was always such a role model. He taught me that fear is just a word in the dictionary. He enjoyed the buzz of fear, the challenge it posed, and he derived great satisfaction and kudos from his extraordinary performances. He always executed meticulous planning, leaving nothing to chance. His incredible story will continue to inspire us all to face our fears, but especially the new arrivals in our family, his two great-grandsons, Spencer and Archer, who are already showing that Scammell action man attitude to life." He is survived by his daughter Karen, two grandchildren Ashley and Tasmin, and two great-grandchildren Spencer and Archer.
An uplifting one next. How lockdown transformed our business, Italian restaurants' success story. With the hospitality sector squeezed to the brink by the economic pressures of the pandemic, it's refreshing to hear about one business which has not only weathered the COVID storm, but positively thrived. The Hearts ad spoke to Verdi's Italian restaurant owner, Terry Di Francesco, who set about making adaptations to his business model in order to meet the changing needs of the St. Albans community. But has it worked? Verdi's, which celebrated its 30th birthday last year, has altered from its traditional restaurant approach to a more cafe drop-in style over the past 4 years, but it was lockdown which really shifted the dynamic of how they trade. The first major change came about when the establishment was given the go-ahead to sell takeaway alcohol in adjoining Clarence Park in July. Customers were able to order draft lager, Aperol Spritzers, and Prosecco in plastic glasses with or without pasta and pizza. In good weather, the park was packed with picnicking households enjoying the festival-style atmosphere. Then it was stopped. Terry said, "All this changed literally overnight when we were told to close because of the national lockdown. Faced with absolutely nothing and no means of even beginning to guess what was coming next, we initially sold the produce we had in stock that would otherwise have gone to waste." The restaurant set up outside in the park and soon found that there was also a huge demand for basics, such as bread, flour and milk, and started ordering more in just to keep local residents stocked up. Further items such as fresh vegetables and fruit, cheese, butter, yogurt, yeast for bread making, pizza dough, and various dried goods such as oil, pasta, biscuits, cereals were added to the available takeaway menu. Terry explained that this adaptation to their service saved people extra visits to the supermarket during the height of the pandemic. Orders came in for home deliveries for fresh fruit and vegetables from regular customers who were either housebound or isolating. He said, "All of this meant we engaged far more with our customers than we had before, and also our business benefited from people coming to the park as it became part of their daily routine. For some, we were the only people who they were able to speak to or see in their daily exercise allowance, and we saw this quite definitely as being vital to the local community. This has probably been the most positive aspect of the lockdown. We've become much more a part of the park and involved with the people who visit. They are not just customers. We have shared their lives during that period, and our staff have become their friends." He said that after many people discovered Clarence Park for the first time, they continued during last summer, and they are seeing them returning again this year. "We see many more families than we used to. The free deck chairs we provide have proved hugely popular, and the park looks amazing with the coloured chairs scattered about on the grass as far as the eye can see. It seems like a lifetime ago now, and looking back, the initial lockdown was incredibly stressful, as apart from the worry of keeping healthy and safe, we had no way of knowing when we would ever be able to reopen. Once we saw that we were able to work with the situation, and that was a good response to what we were doing, we threw our energy into the new way of trading. Currently, Verdi's is in the process of arranging Jazz in the Park this summer between May and the end of September, and UK-sourced lobster and crab are now on the menu, as well as venison burgers.
St Albans City Football Club pitch battle plans to open par to public. Bosses at St Albans City Football Club have pitched plans to open up their bar to the public. The football club is already allowed to operate a bar for club members and their guests at the Clarence Park grounds, but now they are seeking a premises licence that would allow them to sell alcohol to the public within the grounds between the hours of 10 a.m. and 11 p.m. up to 7 days a week. Almost 100 residents have asked for the plans to be kicked into touch, pointing to the potential for public nuisance, crime, disorder and harm to children. At a meeting of St Albans District Council's licensing subcommittee on Friday, the football club and the residents both put their cases. Club chairman and co-owner, Lawrence Levy, said City was the only club in its league not to have an appropriate licence, and he said that the lack of a premises licence impacted on their ability to generate much-needed income. We're therefore unable to generate this income from match day and, more importantly, non-match day events at the stadium. But despite this, St Albans City Football Club is undoubtedly the single most important community supporting club in the district and the numerous wide ranges of outcomes. He pointed to the community activities such as match day invitations to schools and youth groups, school holiday camps, Saturday schools and coaching for schools, as well as offering inclusive and disabled football in the community. He also pointed to the club's involvement in intervention projects for young people and walking football for the over 50s, as well as online sessions for hundreds of children during lockdown. However, in objection to the application, the chair of Clarence Park Residents Association, Paul Brecknell, said the application was out of proportion of a sports club in a public park. He suggested it would turn a member's clubhouse into a pub 365 days a year. Outlining the concerns, he told the councillors, "We wish to see all the sports clubs in the park thrive, but we oppose this application as it is to the detriment of other clubs, park users and residents." And he later said, "Long sessions of pub use are bound to result in antisocial behaviour in surrounding streets, and in the park, rowdiness and intimidating behaviour, urinating in the bushes, littering, etc. There's also likely to be vandalism to the pitches and equipment at the expense of the other sports clubs, vandalism of a brand new play park, more abuse and threats suffered by park rangers." Mr. Brecknell stressed the football club was located in a quiet, non-city centre neighbourhood. He suggested that, should councillors agree to premises licence, alcohol sales be limited to 4 hours a day and that events should be ancillary to football. Many of his concerns were echoed at the meeting by Neil James, who is also a member of the Clarence Park Residents Association. "Like many residents, I support the football club being in Clarence Park," he told the subcommittee. "It has been here a long time and it prides itself on being a community club. They are part of the fabric of the park." But he later added, "The application suggests that the football club wants to operate at Clarence Park more like a pub than a football club. If it succeeds, this application will subordinate the interests of local interests, other park users and park visitors, to the interests of one party only, the football club."
The gates are finally open on a new children's playground in Clarence Park. The £220,000 attraction includes more than 35 features, including a rope bridge, musical bandstand, swings, cricket pavilion, multi-play unit, slide and zip wire. The play area was designed by specialist firm Compan, which was also the contractor for the new Verulamium Park play area. The existing playground was installed 25 years ago and had reached the end of its life. Park owner St Albans District Council has worked on the project with the local community group Clarence Play, who helped organise fundraising efforts and were consulted about the concept designs. The Council City Neighbourhoods Committee, which manages community assets in the unparished area of St Albans, provided £137,500 from its budget. Waste contractor Viola provided a grant of £67,000, and the rest of the finance came from S106 payments, money contributed by property firms for community infrastructure. Chrissy Bushell from Clarence Play explained what children can look forward to. There's a new and improved sandpit with hidden fossils buried in the sand. The pathways leading up to the sandpit is fully wheelchair accessible so everyone can enjoy some digging fun. In a nod to the local heritage of Clarence Park, there is a mini pavilion, bandstand and small horse and cart, and small details honouring the natural beauty surrounding the park can be seen throughout the play area, in leaf imprints, small creature viewers, etc. There are so many swings. A giant rope swing, nest swing, accessible swing, toddler swings, sling swing, parent and toddler swing, triple swing roundabouts, and a few normal swings. The junior playground area includes double zip wires, Coca Wave group swing, sky carousel, overhead bars, multi-level pavilion, double bay swings and basket seat, and the treehouse multi-play tower. The toddler playground area includes sensory path, musical sensory bandstand, imagination station, storytelling, throne and listening chairs, play train, pavilion slide, tunnel mountain slide. Due to coronavirus restrictions, the play park is currently restricted to just 100 people in total. And there's a really lovely picture here of three children playing together, enjoying the giant swing.
My next item has the headline, St Albans set for a wilder future with new project. A new project aims to encourage the local community to take positive action for wildlife. Wilder St Albans is a partnership between the District Council and Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust. The project, which will be launched at the Sustainable Market in St Albans on Sunday, will encourage and empower the local community to take positive action for wildlife across the district. The project's People and Wildlife Officer, Heidi Carruthers, will work together with community groups, individuals, schools and businesses to make space for wildlife in every part of our lives. Heidi said, "Wilder St Albans is an exciting project and a great example of how communities and organisations can come together to make a real difference and play their part in nature's recovery." The How Wild Are We survey will also be launched and will help people record the wildlife around them. Councillor Chris White, Council Leader and Portfolio Holder for Climate, Environment and Transport, said, "We are very pleased to be supporting this exciting and important project. Tackling the climate emergency is our major priority for the years ahead, and we want our whole community to get involved. Wilder St Albans will encourage people of all ages and backgrounds to do exactly that. It will bring people together as they decide on the actions they can take to improve their environment." A dedicated project web page will help St Albans residents get involved in Wilder St Albans by providing resources, ideas and inspiration on what they can do to help wildlife in their gardens, neighbourhoods, businesses, schools and communities. Hertfordshire's State of Nature report, published by Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust last year, highlights the immediate need for action to address the ecological and climate crises and to secure at least 30% of land for wildlife by 2030 to halt wildlife decline.
This is about the latest government announcement. Stay safe as we enjoy hugs and pubs again in latest easing of restrictions. Latest easing of restrictions has brought joy to millions of us. We have been able to meet loved ones indoors, visit restaurants and book tickets for our favourite pastimes. But caution is still paramount. This is what we can do in England and how we can do so safely. What can we do? Groups of six or two households can now meet indoors. This is the first time since 2020 people from other households are allowed to meet in indoor settings, and the first time individuals allowed to be in close contact with family and friends, including hugging. Organised indoor adult group sport and exercises classes can resume. Can I have a party? Larger gatherings of up to 30 people for celebrations such as christenings and weddings in outdoor and COVID-secure indoor settings are allowed. Where has reopened and what events resumed? Indoor seating in restaurants, cinemas, bowling alleys, amusement arcades, indoor play areas, art galleries and museums have reopened. Hotels, hostels and B&B overnight stays are allowed for groups of up to 6 people or 2 households. Large events including conferences, theatre, concert performances and sports events have resumed within capacity limits. Indoor events up to 1,000 attendees or 50% of a venue's capacity, whichever is lower. Outdoor events up to 4,000 attendees or 50% of a venue's capacity, whichever is lower. Large outdoor seated events up to 10,000 attendees or 25% of a venue's capacity, whichever is lower. What are the rules for care homes? Care home residents can have up to 5 regular visitors, with up to 2 visitors at one time or in a single day, in addition to their essential caregiver. Residents leaving the home for a low-risk visit no longer have to self-isolate for 14 days when they return. What safety measures should we still be following? Caution is the watchword. Remember, hands, face, space, fresh air. Wash your hands, wear face coverings, and keep a 2-meter distance in public spaces. Always let the fresh air in. For more information on Stay Safe under the latest relaxed rules, visit gov.uk/coronavirus.
Miles in Memory appeal launched. Rennie Grove is launching a brand new event this summer, a sponsored walk with a difference. During June, the charity is inviting families and friends to plan their own personal walk along a route that holds special meaning for them, creating a unique memorial and celebration of a loved one's life whilst raising funds for the local hospice care. Gemma Ralph, senior community fundraiser for Rennie Grove, explains, "Reconnecting with the people we care about feels more poignant than ever this year. Separated from our families and friends for so long, unable to say goodbye to those we love in the way we want to, the past year has been tough. We hope that Miles in Memory will give people the chance to reconnect with loved ones they celebrate and remember the life of someone special together. Your chosen route can be as short or long as you like, and you can walk it at any time of the day or night during June. It might take in town or countryside at twilight, a sunrise over the sea, or a brunch stop at a favourite cafe. Anything that reminds you of your loved one and holds special meaning and memories for you and your walking companions. Rennie Grove has researched and reviewed local walks in the area where its nurses provide care in patients' homes. Its website suggests stunning routes, including through Hartwood Forest, with peaceful places to pause and reflect. Entry costs £15, which includes your event information pack, an event t-shirt, and wildflower seeds, specially chosen to attract butterflies. Gemma adds, "We've chosen butterflies, beautiful symbols of life, hope and change, as the emblem for this new event. Why not plant your seeds in memory of someone special, and please consider making a donation or raising sponsorship in their memory too. Their legacy will live on, and more local families will get the specialist care they need to stay at home. You can enter online through the Rennie Grove website, where you can create a dedication page and download a logo for any special photos you'd like to share. This article is accompanied by a beautiful photo of 2 ladies on such a walk, wearing their Rennie Grove t-shirts, stating who they're walking in memory of."
St Albans MP Daisy Cooper reflects on a week in Westminster. "Violence is not the answer when hundreds of innocents are being killed. I want to let out my anger, out of my body, because they're killing people. We don't deserve this. These were the words of a 10-year-old girl from Palestine in a video that's since gone viral. It's been heartbreaking and horrifying to watch the scenes of violence between Israel and Palestine. Children, both Palestinian and Israeli, have died, leaving school friends and families traumatized. The most recent hostilities constitute the worst fighting between both sides since 2014. Protests quickly escalated into violent confrontations between Jewish and Palestinian protesters. This led to Israel launching airstrikes on Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, and Hamas retaliating with rocket attacks on Israel. After 11 days of fighting, more than 250 people were killed, most of them in Gaza. As the United Nations started to warn of an all-out war, MPs in the UK Parliament pressed the UK's Foreign Secretary to outline what steps he was taking. It was disappointing that he focused solely on the actions of Hamas and made no acknowledgement of the role of the Israeli government. Neither was there any recognition by him of the fact that the Israeli attacks came whilst Palestinians marked the end of their holy month of Ramadan. I've since written to the Foreign Secretary, asking him to go further. I've called on him to call for the immediate repeal of the Jerusalem District Court's decision to evict the Palestinian families of Sheikh Jarrah and allow them to remain in their homes. I've also asked him to urgently investigate reports that British arms may have been used in airstrikes resulting in civilian deaths, and to respond to the findings of a report by Human Rights Watch. Liberal Democrats believe that a sustainable solution will only be reached in the context of two separate Israeli and Palestinian states. But currently, the UK government doesn't recognise Palestine as a state, even though more than 130 other countries do. After 11 days of violence, both sides have agreed to a ceasefire. The question is, will it last? All Israelis and Palestinians deserve to live in peace. The Israeli government and Hamas need to put their arms down, stop killing innocent civilians and children, and get back to the negotiating table.
Community garden opens in Sopwell. A new community garden has been opened in Sopwell with the aim of encouraging local, sustainable food growing and nurture and appreciation and respect for our wildlife. The project was started by local resident Kate Swindles and is the result of 18 months planning by the voluntary group Grow Community Sopwell. Kate said, "We hope the garden will be a focus for the community. Eventually, it will have many edibles and wildlife-friendly plants grown without pesticides or artificial fertilizers. The idea is that local people can volunteer to help grow the plants. Everyone can then pick them and use the food when it's ready. The garden site is next to the Berners Drive play area, which was favored as it is a relatively safe place away from main roads, is geographically central in the ward, and is an area that many residents pass by. A consultation with residents in 2020 showed the majority responding positively, favouring the physical and mental health benefits of the garden, alongside environmental and community aspects. St Albans MP Daisy Cooper, Mayor Councillor Janet Smith, and County Councillor Sandy Walkington were all present at the opening and planting seedlings. Local families spent the weekend planting vegetables, including potatoes, green beans, and courgettes in the new solid oak raised beds. Daisy Cooper said, "Huge congratulations and well done to everyone involved setting up Grow Community Sopwell. It is fantastic to see people of all ages and backgrounds getting involved planting vegetables, fruit and flowers. It will be a great asset for the community and I can't wait to see how it develops. The project was developed in consultation with St Albans District Council's community engagement team, and the volunteers were supported with a series of online advisory sessions from Alison Findlay, a community outreach advisor from the Royal Horticultural Society. We want the community to feel ownership of this area and to make it their own. Guidance is available to those who want to learn, and all working parties and community events follow COVID-safe guidelines.
And now, a couple of upcoming events that may be of interest. First, opera is coming to St Albans. Opera is coming to St Albans this weekend at the Roman Theatre of Verulamium. Charles Court Opera presents the world premiere of Express GNS on Bank Holiday Monday, May 31st, at the Roman Theatre Open Air Festival. It will be all aboard for a murderous musical mystery tour when the masters of Gilbert and Sullivan in Small Spaces perform this new side-splitting spoof of the classic railway mystery. A trio of intriguing travellers and a pianist take on multiple characters, uncover clue upon red herring while ripping through the GNS operettas. The same award-winning company will be bringing its acclaimed and enchanting production of Iolanthe to the festival. Gilbert and Sullivan's sharp satire of power, privilege and parliamentary democracy opens with two performances on Sunday, May 30th at 2:30pm and 7:30pm. Brought to life by musical director David Eaton, the Iolanthe cast includes GNS Master Richard Stewart as the Lord Chancellor. And here's a lunchtime concert. Now that lockdown restrictions have eased, weekly lunchtime concerts will restart at St Peter's Church. The first Wednesday concert of this year will be performed by American composer-pianist Eric McElroy on June the 2nd. St Peter's stopped hosting its lunchtime concerts last March due to COVID-19. Organisers are excited to be able to resume them from next Wednesday with a programme including two pieces by Philip Martin, Maurice Ravel's Valses Nobles et Sentimentales, and Johannes Brahms' Intermezzi, Opus 117. The St Albans Church is planning to run the concerts every Wednesday at 1pm until July 14th. Organisers will then stop for the summer before starting the autumn term in September. We are asking the audience to register to attend the concerts so that we can make sure the numbers allow for social distancing, said a spokesperson. Concerts run for just under an hour. To sign up, visit www.stpeterschurch.uk.com/lunchtime-concerts.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, May 29th. The 3 o'clock drama on Radio 4 is Seven Songs for Simon Dixilus, an original drama with songs by Sebastian Bachkovich. Simon Dixilus' life just got very strange. Since being jilted on his wedding day, he's experiencing a strange form of heartache. A girl group in shimmering dresses keep following him around and singing love songs at him. Only no one else can see or hear them. Remember the 1949 Ealing black comedy, Kind Hearts and Coronets? Harry Enfield stars as nine members of the Dascoigne family in this adaptation at 4pm on Radio 4 Extra. Over on Radio 3 at 6:30, this evening's opera on 3 is Humperdinck's magical fairy tale opera Hansel and Gretel, recorded in December at the Theatre Royal Glasgow. This Scottish opera production is sung in English, translated from the German by David Pountney. And at 9 on Radio 2, there's a new four-part series, Huey Morgan's Latin Adventures, in which the Friday late night Radio 2 show presenter returns with a showcase of Latin sounds, starting with salsa, which has its roots in Cuba, Puerto Rico and Africa, but coalesced into its own genre in New York. Sunday, May 30th, Private Passions, Radio 3, 12 noon, Michael Barclay welcomes observer, writer and art critic Laura Cumming, who shares the extraordinary story of her family and her favourite music, including works by Bach, Shostakovich, Mozart and Chopin. If you're in the mood for comedy, on Radio 4 Extra at 2:20, you can hear How Does That Make You Feel?, an omnibus edition of Sheila Stevenson's comedy drama in which Martha, Frances Tomilty, a sincere and caring psychotherapist, begins to lose patience with her clients, played by Roger Allam, Tim McHenry and Rebecca Sayre, all first broadcast in 2017. Drama on Radio 4 at 3 is Hardy's Women, Jude the Obscure, the latest in the series of Thomas Hardy novels to be retold from the point of view of a female character. Burnt by a bishop and banned for its indecency, Hardy's final completed novel strikes a more modern tone than his other works. This sensitive three-part adaptation tells the tale of stonemason Jude Fawley through the eyes of his free-spirited cousin, Sue Bridehead. And at 6:45pm, Sunday feature on Radio 3 is Regarding the Pain of Others. In her lengthy 2003 essay, Susan Sontag wrote about the limitations in depicting suffering. Alan Little has spent decades reporting in conflict zones from Bosnia to Sierra Leone. Here he examines the purpose of war reporting and its attendant photographic images and asks why they seem to make little difference. On to then some of the highlights which are broadcast each day at the same time. Monday to Friday, same time, same radio station. Starting at 9:45 each day, Book of the Week, Radio 4, Natives, Race and Class in the Ruins of Empire. Rapper, author and activist Akala reads his own book which charts his story of growing up enduring racism alongside the social, historical and political factors that have shaped the world we live in. At 12 noon on Radio 3, Composer of the Week features Robert Simpson, 1921 to 1997. Presenter Donald MacLeod looks at the life and work of the English composer, who was a champion of lesser-known composers and lived his life by principles of pacifism, socialism and anti-pessimism. Returning to Radio 4 just after midday, Ruth Gemmell reads Elizabeth von Arnim's 1920 novella In the Mountains, in which an English woman who has suffered a terrible loss finds solace and the restorative power of nature in the sanctuary of a Swiss chalet. It's repeated each night, Monday to Friday, on Radio 4 at 10:45. Still, all week, Radio 4, 1:45, Ladder to Somewhere. Lisa Ward continues the dramatic story of how she escaped from a life of poverty, social chaos and gang crime started in her award-winning first series, Ladder to Nowhere. And Albania is the subject of this week's The Essay at 10:45 on Radio 3. It's the mid-1990s and Albania is in turmoil after decades of communist isolation. Drawn by the mystery of a country she knows little about and anticipating something major about to happen, journalist Joanna Robertson buys a one-way boat ticket and sets off to live there as a foreign correspondent. On to Monday, May 31st, Bank Holiday Monday. But it's still start of the week on Radio 4 at 9 a.m. Andrew Marr discusses the cultural, personal and literary legacies of D.H. Lawrence with critic Francis Wilson, novelist Salman Rushdie and poet Simon Armitage. A shortened repeat is available at 9:30 p.m. In the Radio 3 lunchtime concert from Wigmore Hall at 1 p.m, Martin Handley introduces Axaldi in a programme of expressive music from 16th and 17th century Italy, which the ensemble calls Chromatic Renaissance, interspersed with works by living composers. The afternoon drama at 2 on Radio 4 is Escape Kit, a comedy by William Thirst Gaskill about two misfits, an elderly man and a 14-year-old schoolboy, who found solace in each other's dilemmas. And at 8 on Radio 4, The Great Post Office Trial, The Reckoning. In a follow-up to last year's The Great Post Office Trial, Nick Wallace explores how campaigners have been continuing the fight and reveals new details on the story that have emerged in court. In the last of the current series of The Life Scientific at 9 a.m. on Radio 4, climate scientist Tamsin Edwards talks to Jim Al-Khalili about her life and career, which has seen her move from particle physics into global climate modelling. It's repeated at 9:30 p.m. Back on Radio 4 at 3:30, Made of Stronger Stuff, a new four-part series in which the psychologist Kimberly Wilson and Dr. Zand van Tuchelen take a journey around the human body to find out what it can tell us about our innate capacity for change. They start with the lungs. Four-part drama begins at 8:30 on Radio 4 Extra, running at the same time each night until Friday. In King Solomon's Carpet, Jarvis, Tom and Alice are all drawn to the London Underground, but for very different reasons. This dramatisation of the 1991 novel by Barbara Vine, pseudonym Ruth Rendell, was first broadcast in 1996. And don't forget, In Touch, 8:40, Radio 4, news, views and information for everyone who is blind or partially sighted. Wednesday, June 2nd, Forethought on Radio 4 at 9:30 a.m. is entitled Defeat Don't Repeat. After serving a prison sentence for drug dealing, Sergeant Reese Rutledge says joining the army saved his life. He believes everyone deserves a second chance and has set up a project to help steer young people away from crime. Cricket lovers will no doubt be tuning in to Test Match Special Live, England versus New Zealand, for the latest commentary on the first day of the first test at Lord's. Always a remarkable day, particularly even more so this year, the first test of the summer at Lord's. With Jonathan Agnew, Issa Guha, Simon Mann and Daniel Norcross, it starts at 10:25 on Radio 4 Longwave. It's also available on Radio 5 Live Digital. So Radio 5 Live Extra on digital. At 7:30 on Radio 3 in concert, renowned pianist Mitsuko Uchida plays all eight of Schubert's Impromptu in a special concert as part of the 120th anniversary celebrations of Wigmore Hall. Originally aimed at the amateur market and the well-heeled drawing room, Schubert's two sets of Impromptu are among his best-loved keyboard works. And at 11 p.m. on Radio 4, the first of a four-part series, Twain Amain, Black Woman, is on the subject of food. Born to Jamaican parents and raised by a white parent who herself was a farmer's daughter from North Devon, comedian Twain Amain is keenly aware of the many cultural influences that have shaped her identity. Part stand-up, part roundtable chat with guests. Thursday, June 3rd, assignment Syria's Decade of Conflict at 9:05 in the morning on BBC World Service, presented by Syrian-born journalist Linda Sinjab. The series began a few weeks ago, but this episode, Mike Thompson's extraordinary dispatch from 2016 about the rescue of a secret library hidden in the basement of a crumbling house in the besieged town of Diriyah, is a bittersweet mix of hope and despair. At 11:30 on Radio 4, in part 4 of A Life in Music, Jude Rogers explores how music can keep us active, alert and involved in the world around us as we grow older. Music can improve the way our brains process sound, and participating in a choir can also increase our interest in life as we age. With guests including singer-songwriter Marianne Faithfull. The drama at 2:15 on Radio 4 is What's He Building in There? Kate is desperate to get her gaming brother out of the attic before the family home is sold, but as Ryan's attempts to build his online world erupt into psychiatric crisis, she's forced to confront uncomfortable truths about their past. And for jazz lovers, Radio 3, 5 p.m, in tune, Katie Derham welcomes jazz vocalist and pianist Ian Shaw, who's joined by guitarist and longtime collaborator David Preston for a live performance. So we come to Friday, June 4th. If you fancy a bit of vintage comedy, Radio 4 Extra has Dad's Army, adapted from the original TV scripts in 1974, at 8 a.m, 12 noon and 7 p.m. Of course, it's Arthur Lowe, John Le Mesurier, Clive Dunn, Ian Lavender and John Laurie. We're all doomed. The final programme, It's a Fair Cop, at 11:30 on Radio 4, is entitled Policing COVID. In a departure from the traditional format, Alfie looks back at the past 15 months and explores some of the issues facing the police during the COVID pandemic, with contributions from senior and frontline police figures, as well as the usual tests for the assembled audience cops. Radio 3 in concert at 7:30 from the Royal Festival Hall. Ian Skelly presents works by Beethoven, Liszt, Stravinsky and Sibelius as part of a series of farewell concerts featuring Esa-Pekka Salonen as principal conductor of the Philharmonia Orchestra. Lastly, in Meeting Myself Coming Back at 9 p.m. on Radio 4, former Lib Dem leader Paddy Ashdown reflects on key moments of his life with John Wilson, including memories of serving in the Marines, his first major speech at the Liberal Party conference, and the horrors of the scenes he witnessed in Bosnia in 1992. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable week of radio listening.
This is Rupert Evershed reading my monthly nature notes for the Heart's Ad. The Festival of Spring. Spring warmth seems to have largely eluded us so far, and yet the great show of spring must go on, and does. Expectations are high, and I find myself back as a small child, peering out from the crowd lining the road, awaiting the appearance of the first carnival float, and then each successive excitement in the great procession. Blossom on the blackthorn and cherry trees, the first sand martin, and then a flurry of wheat ears and swallows. All have passed by, and are now joined by cuckoos, house martins, and, in the last week, those harbingers of summer, swifts. Each arrival brings a dose of joy, as the world in which we live fills once again with life and music and beauty. The brown reed beds at my local gravel pits are now filled with the songs of reed and sedge warblers, rising up the stems and with them the new green shoots spearing up from the water below. The cheerful disyllabic song of the chiff-chaff has been overlaid with the liquid cascade of willow warblers, and everywhere white-throats spring up to rattle out their song. All of these birds have arrived despite the persistent and cold northerly winds set over the UK throughout most of April. This northerly headwind has perhaps accounted for some extra special sightings of birds that would normally alight just for a day, but instead have lingered on, perhaps hoping for a change in wind direction. Beautiful male redstarts have graced hedgerows, hopping in and out amongst the resident robins, but upstaging them in outfits of red, black and white. While ringoozles have shown off their bright white crescent chests amidst our plainer blackbirds. Both migrants have tarried longer than usual and brought a welcome flutter of excitement to our southern farmland. Amidst all the excitement of returning birds, there's been another show unfolding, a less flamboyant one, but heartwarming nevertheless. All day long in the garden, robins have flown back and forth from our tumble-down shed, carrying food in and waste from the nest out. The chore is relentless, but tells me that so far all is well in the robin nest. This daily devotion is evident wherever I look. The blackbirds, song thrushes, blue and great tits, magpies and crows are all engaged in the same urgent business of chick rearing. It comes with the occasional ruckus as members of the crow family attempt to pillage others' nests, but for the most part it is a silent work, interspersed by the happy trills of hungry baby birds. It is also hard work, and our resident birds in full family mode seem tired and worn against the backdrop of glamorous new arrivals. It is as if the Oscars have come to town, or I have strolled into the Cannes Film Festival, with gaudy celebrities stepping out onto red carpets and lolling in the hot sun to soak up the atmosphere, but all watched by local onlookers who must attend to their everyday and likely less glamorous lives. This contrast was no more evident than on a recent walk round Gorhambury on the edge of St Albans. Walking along the track, the fence wires before me were lined with newly arrived swallows, like strings of jewels with ruby throats set in sapphire wings. The adjacent field was carpeted with bright yellow dandelions, and between them strutted even brighter yellow birds, wagtails from Africa. And yet in the same scene, resident robins hopped up and down, filling their beaks with flies and grubs for hungry mouths, and from the nearby river, incessant squeals demanded coot mother deliver more food. It is, of course, nature's festival season, with all the usual vibrancy of nature, intensified by the very best in plumage and rarefied by the passage of visitors from distant lands, celebrities if you like. It is my favourite season too, and one that sees me getting out of bed to greet the dawn, either to listen to the chorus of resident birds or to go out looking for the celebrities. Last week it was two curlews flying overhead, and this week promises the return of the spotted flycatchers. So keep your eyes and ears peeled.
Hello, I'm going to read an article from Heart's Life magazine, which is called Trailblazing Lifesaver, and it's subtitled, Deafness Has Not Stopped Richard Webb Stevens Devoting His Life to Others as a Trailblazer in the Ambulance Service. And it's written by Sherry Hostler. One of the key aims of Deaf Awareness Week, which is held every May, is to flip the usual understanding of deafness on its head and promote the positive aspects of living with deafness and hearing loss. Someone who's refused to let deafness hold him back, and indeed has drawn positives from it, is Richard Webb Stevens, RWS, as he's fondly known by friends, is the first profoundly deaf paramedic to work for London's Air Ambulance. He was the first paramedic at the scene of the London Westminster Bridge terror attack, and thanks to his tireless work in the deaf community, he's an inspiration to others. Hertfordshire born and bred, Richard's hearing impairment was first diagnosed at the age of 4 when his teachers felt he had difficulty concentrating and noticed his speech was slightly different to the other children. During my school days in Chipperfield, Richard says, I remember growing my hair to cover up my hearing aids. While it doesn't bother me now, nobody wants to stand out at that age. And it's probably partially why I developed my rather happy-go-lucky demeanour to compensate. When he left school, Richard was determined to serve society, but after failing a hearing test to join the army, his next plan was to become a nurse. While that job didn't quite work out for him either, there was one major benefit. It's a good job I tried, he said, because that's how I met my wife, Marie, and fell in love with her beautiful smile, Richard says with a grin. It was as a student nurse that he'd watch ambulances coming in and out of hospital, and decided that the ambulance service was his vocation. It was a job that was perhaps in his blood. My grandfather used to drive ambulances for the RAF, and in the early part of World War II, he would drive the ambulance crews on the runway at Bovingdon Airfield, Richard says. 60 years later, he found himself on that very same airfield doing his own training. There weren't special allowances for me, and I didn't really need any. However, everyone was very kind. Richard's openness about his hearing impairment, he says, I'm always happy to talk about it, no doubt encouraged colleagues to be at ease. It was the start of a 9-year stint on ambulances. I love the job, and I've never found my deafness to be a problem, as I can generally read a situation without hearing words. Also, there are lots of standard speech patterns in a given situation, and I'll hear a rhythm of words and understand them. He also lip-reads, as background noise can sometimes make hearing very difficult, even with a hearing aid. Keen to make the most of his life-saving knowledge, Richard shifted his skills to a different type of emergency responder, motorcycle paramedic. On call in March 2017, he received a report about an incident on Westminster Bridge. It would later be clear that a lone terrorist had driven a car at speed at pedestrians on the pavement of the bridge. More than 50 people were injured in the attack, 5 fatally. I was the first on the scene. It was clear that it was a major incident and there were bodies all over the bridge. I rode around the scene and assessed who needed help first, so that by the time more paramedics arrived, I was able to direct them. Despite imminent danger and armed police advising them to leave the scene, Richard and his colleagues refused to go until all the patients were cared for and safely moved. After 16 years in service, Richard felt it was time for another change, joining the Helicopter Emergency Medical Service, or HEMS. He said, it's the equivalent of bringing the hospital to the critically ill trauma patients at the roadside. As a motorcycle paramedic, he would attend some horrific incidents, but there was only so much he could do at the scene. The air ambulance offers more capabilities. He said, with HEMS, we only attend major traumas, and we have a one doctor, one paramedic crew, so if necessary, we can perform surgery under anaesthetic on site. An intense 6 weeks of training was followed by a 7-day helicopter crew course. By the time you have your assessment on the last day, you're exhausted, but they want to see how you perform on your worst possible day, Richard said. What he loves about HEMS is the humanity. Yes, patients can still sometimes die, but you can ensure their last moments are as pain-free as possible, and you can look their families in the eye to say you did everything you could. In 2018, after 20 years medical service, Richard was awarded Richard was awarded the Queen's Ambulance Long Service and Good Conduct Medal. "It meant a great deal to me," he says, but he's just as proud that he's been able to inspire others to follow in his footsteps. There are 5 profoundly deaf paramedics working for the London Ambulance Service who were all inspired by Richard's example. After a period of ill health in 2019, Richard decided to take a short break from HEMS to get back on his feet. However, in March last year, he contracted COVID-19. He said, "It felt like my lungs were on fire and I could barely breathe. I wound up in hospital. It was dreadful being on a COVID ward, with the constant fear of dying." The 47-year-old explains that the hospital staff were amazing, but the face masks were a huge problem when it came to communicating. Even people with regular hearing were struggling to decipher speech. Despite his condition, once the staff knew he was a paramedic, they phrased things differently, and Richard actually found himself helping others as he could hear those same speech patterns. He said, "As a deaf person, you never really relax, as you're always looking for hints and signs. Thankfully, he is now much better, despite some lingering after effects. And while he's not yet back in his former role, he's able to donate convalescent blood plasma to those who are seriously ill with the disease." You'd think that with a life this full, Richard wouldn't have time for anything else. But he's a devoted husband to Marie and father to their 4 children. And when he's not creating new recipes in the kitchen, he can often be found accompanying Marie on guitar at open mic nights. Yes, you hear that right. He performs live on guitar despite not being able to hear. "I'm pretty much self-taught. I can't read music, but I watch finger patterns and visualize them in my head. It's ironic, but I play by ear." It's just another example of resilience and playing the hand you're dealt in the best possible way. RWS goes even further in a life dedicated to others.
Hello, my name's Sue. This article is from Hertfordshire Life and it's called Growing Wellbeing. Growing plants is the simple yet powerful action at the heart of a Caldecott project, bringing together people of all ages and supporting those in need of a helping hand. It's by Cherry Maslin. As soon as you step through the gates of Making Life Beautiful, tucked down a country lane just outside the village of Caldecott, you know you are in no ordinary garden nursery. Rising above the profusion of plants and half hidden among the trees is Cedric, a 10-foot metal giraffe, accompanied by his wives and children. You might also wonder at the ironing boards in the greenhouse. They're just the right height for potting and adjustable according to whoever's on potting duty. Then there's the sign at the front door. If you see something that makes you laugh, either buy it or marry it. "We're always busy, but I like to make sure we have a bit of fun while we're at it," says Making Life Beautiful's irrepressible founder and director, Isabel Barnes. Isabel set up probably the smallest and most unique nursery in Hertfordshire in 2016. It's in the large garden of her home in the tiny hamlet of Driver's End in North Hertfordshire. A community interest company, the nursery is run with the help of just 2 part-time staff and a host of enthusiastic volunteers of varying degrees of green-fingeredness. Most importantly, it provides a tranquil haven for individuals facing challenges who can learn new skills in a welcoming environment. The project combines Isabel's 40-year career as a social worker, her lifelong love of plants, and a genuine delight in the company of people of all ages, backgrounds, and interests. "I love being with people and plants and seeing both flourish when given the right sort of attention," she laughs. The therapeutic benefits of gardening and being close to nature were highlighted during the restrictions caused by COVID-19, but it's a connection that's long been clear to many gardeners. "It's about putting something in and getting something back," explains Isabel. "If you plant seeds, repot plants, or even just water them, they'll grow, so you get a positive response. Sometimes people feel they put effort into life, but don't get much back." It's a benefit felt by many of the volunteers, whose numbers increased during lockdown as people were furloughed and looking for something positive to do.
The nursery is all about inclusivity. Everyone brings something different. It doesn't matter whether people have horticultural skills or not. There's always someone to learn from, explains Isabel. It's about companionship, working together in a friendly environment, and learning from one another, seeing the plants grow, and then going off and selling them. It's amazing. Volunteers are always welcome at the nursery, whether they simply have spare time they'd like to use productively, want to learn more about plants, or understand the benefits of their well-being, or all three, like Tim Davies. I have suffered with depression and related mental illness issues, and was out of work for a while, says Tim, who got involved with Making Life Beautiful after someone working for a mental health services suggested it would be a good fit for him as a volunteer. Working outdoors with nature and plants has been very therapeutic for me, and I've progressed into paid work with the nursery, which has helped a lot. I've benefited from learning new skills in gardening and horticulture, and meeting some lovely people, both customers and those who volunteer and work at MLB, especially Isabel. She is incredibly warm, generous and understanding, as well as being very knowledgeable in all things horticultural. The plants grown at the nursery can be bought online at the nursery itself, open Tuesday to Sunday, 10:30 till 4:30, or at Hertfordshire village fairs and events, and regular pop-up stalls outside local pubs and churches. All profits are ploughed back into the nursery, funding the purchase of new plants, supplies and equipment. Selling at events and our regular stalls is great fun and is often where we meet new volunteers, says Isabel. It's very satisfying for our volunteers to see our van loaded up with beautiful plants they've helped to create. Making Life Beautiful isn't Isabel's first horticultural adventure. After retiring from social work, she ran Manor Gardens Nursery in a Victorian walled garden in King's Walden, then later set up Waste Not Want Not in an overgrown field near Nebworth. This social enterprise company recycles unwanted materials and nurtures unsold plants from major retailers, with the help of people referred from organisations that support ex-offenders and those recovering from life crises. Isabel stepped down from this role at the age of 76, once she had the right people to take over the project, which won her a North Harts District Council Award for outstanding work in the community. The truth is, she says, that after I retired from Waste Not, Want Not, having been doing 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, it left a bit of a gap in my life. So I set up Making Life Beautiful to keep me out of mischief. I reckon you should never let your skills and talents go to waste, and one needs to stay active and interested in life into old age. There's no sign of Isabel stopping yet. I feel incredibly privileged to be surrounded by so many lovely people of all ages, with everyone enhancing each other's lives and adding a lot of fun into the bargain. It's a joy to have so much help and support in keeping the old marbles rolling, as well as running the nursery. For Hertfordshire gardeners planning to revamp their plots, Making Life Beautiful is offering colourful perennials and summer bedding, as well as plants with health benefits for the home. Buy plants online or check for local events and pop-up stalls across the county via the website makinglifebeautiful.org. But don't miss visiting this quirky little nursery in person. Otherwise, how are you going to meet Cedric?
And here's an announcement on behalf of the Hertfordshire Library Service.
Did you know that in days gone by, there was a giant in Hertfordshire? There actually was. To find out more about this and other crazy stuff about the county, join me, Vicky, a local storyteller, for the Tales from Hertfordshire storytelling event, free for everyone and online on Tuesday the 15th of June at 7 p.m. It's a special event for the High Viz Fortnight, a celebratory 2 weeks when libraries across the country look to raise the profile of accessible library services, collections and activities for people with a vision or print impairment. Absolutely everyone is welcome. It's free and will be on Microsoft Teams. If you haven't used Teams before, it's really easy to use and it's a bit like Zoom, so you get to enjoy this event in your own home. It is an event that's aimed at adults, and to book, please go to the library website, hertfordshire.gov.uk/libraries. And once you're there, you select events and things to do, and then click where it says, have a look at our current events. And then you scroll down a bit and you'll find the Tales from Hertfordshire storytelling event. I look forward so much to sharing stories with you on June the 15th. From the delightfully dastardly to the downright daft. Meet you there.
We're nearing the end of this week's programme. It just remains for me to thank our contributors, Elaine, Anna, Andrew, Fiona and Sue, and of course John for the radio listings and Rupert for his nature notes. Ian will be here next week with Primary, but that just about ties up the Red Saturn programme for May 2021. We close with Rowan Piggott's song, For Queen and For Country. I do hope you enjoy it. Goodbye for now and stay safe.
So that my own toil is made to arise again early and tend to the gardens of folks who were in their beds laid. Oh, for queen and country, though the latter is no fault of mine, I work for all and sundry. I'm a labourer, come rain or shine. Gone are the days when on jelly I dined. A bumbling old fool I've become. And I hum as I go the old chants that I know from our glory days spent in the sun. Oh, for queen and country, though the latter is no fault of mine, I work for all and sundry, I'm a labourer, come rain or shine. Well, the people are swarming for honey and milk in that land that was promised of old. But they don't understand that the crops are unmanned, the colonies now all stand cold. Oh, for queen and country, though the latter is no fault of mine, I work for all and sundry, I'm a labourer, come rain or shine. Where there once was a gate to a palace, by guards in their striped livery, you'll find corpses piled high as the honey's run dry to pay those from the mortuary. Oh, for queen and country, though the latter is no thought of mine, I work for all and sundry, I'm a labourer, come rain or shine. Oh, for queen and country, though the latter is no thought of mine, I work for all and sundry, I'm a labourer, come rain or shine.